unreal, uncensored, unradio.
CliffCentral.com.
Growing up in Mississippi, my prayer was, for as long as I can remember, God, use me. Use me. Use this life. I don't know what the future holds for me, but I know that there is a vision for my life that is greater than my imagination can hold. Use me. Use me. What would you have me to do? And that dream, that desire, that prayer brought me somehow to television.
And she's gonna learn that this life will hit you hard in the face, wait for you to get back up just so it can kick you in the stomach. But getting the wind knocked out of you is the only way to remind your lungs how much they like the taste of air.
If we want to give all of our children a foundation for their dreams and opportunities worthy of their promise, if we want to give them that sense of limitless possibility, that belief that there is always something better out there if you're willing to work for it, then we must work like never before.
To those waiting with bated breath for that favorite media catchphrase, the U-turn, I have only one thing to say. U-turn if you want to. The ladies not for turning.
You might never fail on the scale I did, but some failure in life is inevitable. It is impossible to live without failing at something, unless you live so cautiously that you might as well not have lived at all, in which case you fail by default.
Each of us must truly be a woman in the world. We need to be as fearless as the women whose stories you have applauded, as committed as the dissidents and activists you have heard from, as audacious as those who start movements for peace when all seems lost. Together, I do believe it is part of the mission to ensure that people everywhere, women and men alike, finally have the opportunity to live up to their own God-given potential.
Good morning and welcome to this Women's Day special with myself, Jonathan Sinclair. Now, it is a public holiday. Women's Day was actually yesterday, but luckily for us, if a public holiday falls on the Sunday, we get the Monday off. So whatever you are doing, whether you're a man or a woman, I just wish you a happy Women's Day and hope you're enjoying your public holiday. Now, we have an amazing show today. Of course, as a man, I cannot do this show without inviting women to come and join with me and explain to me what it is like to be a woman. So I'm joined in studio by Tamarin Jardine. Tamarin, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Thank you so much for taking your time on your public holiday on your Women's Day to be here and to express your feelings on this day. So I see you brought a little guest in studio. You brought your dog with.
Yes, little Michelangelo. He's his mommy's baby.
Awesome. Now, Tamarin, I don't want the show to be a sad show. I do, however, want to deal with the issues that affect women in 2015. So we are going to be discussing some of the tougher issues affecting women, but I also want the show to be a celebration of the superwoman in our own lives. And just thinking of my own childhood, I know that I was raised by my mother without a father. I was raised by my grandmother as well. During school, a lot of my time in school, the principal of my school was a female. Most of my teachers were female. So for me, in my life as a man, I have always looked up to women, and they've always, I don't know, almost held an authority place in my life, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I really think that because of that, I do respect women more. I do value women more. But I wonder, is that the case in everyday life for everyone? How do you find being a woman? How are you treated?
I think women are treated according to the way that they set their own precedent to be treated. I know that people say that's not always true, but I look at my mom and I look at my family, and there are women in the family who have suffered abuse at the hands of their partners, and there a lot of them, I'm not saying if they're a child, I'm saying at an older age, instead of making a stand and leaving the man, they stay there. And I know that they always say once someone does something that he can change, and those men never change. I look at my one family member, she stayed in this relationship, and she keeps saying things are changing, and he might have changed in some respects, but she still ends up with broken bones and that kind of stuff. And you'd look at her, and all you want to do is save her, but it's up to the woman to sometimes save themselves. And people say that's not true, but as much as we can scream and shout and fight for her, if she's not willing to make that fight, then she won't. But then I look at my mom, if a man ever had to raise her hand to her, I think my mom would probably, the guy would end up in hospital, because my mom would probably do something in retaliation.
Well, it's interesting you say that. I think a lot of women grow up and they say, you know, if a man were ever to lift a hand to me, I would be out the door straight away. If a man were to ever treat me in such a way, I'd be out the door straight away.
Yeah.
But then when it comes to that, when you're in that relationship, and it happens to you, and you love this man, you love this person, and you're living together, and perhaps you're financially a bit dependent on him.
Yeah.
I think the whole story changes. I think you start to overlook, maybe he was just drunk, that's why he hit me, he was just angry, I shouldn't have said this. And I think until you're in that situation,
you can't judge.
Yeah.
And I agree with that completely, and that's why I say it's up to the woman to make that decision. And as much as we can scream and shout and do all of that, there are so many good men out there, and there are the few bad rotten eggs that are creating these issues and making women face these issues. But it's we can't judge that situation until we are in it. Like, I look at my cousin, and she's an amazing woman, and she loves everyone around her. She's so good. She's an animal person. She's beautiful, but sometimes things happen, and she is financially secure.
Oh, I was just going to say that. Is it because of the finances that she doesn't leave? Or is it the hold that the man has on her, that those emotional bonds that tie them together?
I think it's the emotional bond. I think it's if you have children with the person, if you don't, like, there's so many things that, for example, if you look at a woman will always sacrifice her own happiness for her children.
Mm.
And that is what a woman is inbred to do. Most women will bend over backwards.
It's instinctive within them.
Yes, it is. And you look at, like, my mom is an incredible woman. She would do anything, and I'm sure the same for your mom. Women are amazing machines. And when it comes to, I say machine because they work like completely different. When a woman has a bond or love or something, she is an unstoppable force. She is no longer human in any sense. She can put her feelings, if it's to save something else, if it's to save her children, if it's to save herself.
Or to save the marriage
or, yeah,
put your own feelings aside.
And many women end up in loveless marriages, but they're so quick to be the woman that is judging a woman who's being abused.
Mm-hmm.
Are they not being emotionally abused by being in a marriage that is loveless for the love of their children?
Mm-hmm.
So we as women do make a lot of sacrifices, and that's what the problem is.
It's interesting that you bring that up, because it's not just about the physical abuse. There is emotional abuse, verbal abuse, psychological abuse, you know, making a woman feel worthless, and in that way she feels she needs to be with you to validate herself.
Completely. And that's where I think a lot of people, a bruise is a lot easier to see, but the emotional abuse runs so much deeper than any bruise you'll ever see.
I think it's so easy to sit on the outside and say it's this woman's own fault, why did she let that happen? But I think when you're in that situation, that's only when you understand the emotional bonds, the intricacies of what is really going on.
Yeah.
But let's just get all the negative stuff out the way. There are 12 big issues that are affecting women globally in 2015, and I think the first one, and let's just kick it off with this, is lack of access to education. So one quarter of the girls in the world aged 15 to 24, now this is in developing countries, hey? They have never completed primary school. Of the 774 million illiterate people in the world, two-thirds are female. Now that is a shocking statistic.
But the thing is with that, men, if you're in a household and you can only afford education for one child,
it's going to be the boy, isn't it?
Yeah, you've got two girls and a boy.
Mm.
Whether the girl is probably going to finish schooling and do much better than the boy, in cultural beliefs, man is meant to provide. So women do take a back seat in that. Mm. And that's in a lot of cultures across the world that believe in that.
Well, let's hear what Malala Yousafzai has to say about this.
I was going back to Swat from Islamabad, and on my way, I saw a girl, and she had a needle kind of stick that was not pen. And she had a paper of some advertisement. And she was trying to write with that. And I saw that girl, and she was selling oranges with her father. And I saw her in the Malakand. That's a very beautiful place. So I felt in my heart that why not this girl goes to school? Why not she study? Why not she learn about oranges, that where the oranges come from? Why not she study about trees, about plants, instead of working all the day? And I could see that she loved education. And when I asked her, do you love school? She was really committed for education, but she couldn't go to school because she was a very small girl, nearly her age was 9 or 10. So I said to myself that, Malala, now you need to work for education of girls. And you need to work for the education of every child. Because usually we talk about terrorism. But not only terrorism is the hurdle. There are many other things that are stopping girls to go to school. We can see that children are suffering from child labor. Because of poverty, they have to do child trafficking. They are victims of early forced marriages. They are victims of sexual violence. And as well as the cultural norms and traditions are stopping them. And her only job and her only life is just to cook, feed children, give birth to children, take care of her husband, her mother-in-law, her father-in-law. That's the life of a woman in Pakistan, in India. So that's why I wrote the book, to tell the story to people that this is what is happening in the developing countries. On one side of the world, we can see that the main issues about female is that what kind of clothes should they wear, it's about fashion, it's about designing. But on the other side, in the suffering countries, women are starving for education. People are homeless, children are starving for food. They have thirst, and as well as they are starving for education. So that's why I want to tell the world that let's think about these people. And let us think about these children and let us help them. And through this book, this is not only the story of one girl, this is a story of every girl who has been suffering from terrorism in Pakistan and in Afghanistan.
Yes, that was Malala Yousafzai talking about girl education around the world and what a challenge it is for these girls in especially developing countries to have an education. And I suppose when you're battling to put food on the table, I think in a family, education tends to take a back seat.
Yeah.
And Tamron, like you were saying earlier, if there is a boy in the family and you can only afford to educate one child, because the boy has to grow up to be the breadwinner, more than likely he's going to be the one to go to school.
Cool.
Let's get through some of these other issues that are facing women globally in 2015. The next issue is equal pay. Now, women experience a pay gap compared to men's wages for the same work. So let's just go with America because everything is based on the dollar. So in America, a woman earns 81 cents for every dollar that a man earns. So that just shows you that there is still a pay gap. And in America, which is a first world country, you can just imagine what it's like in developing countries. And I think this pay gap is what causes a lot of the abuse when the man knows that the woman in his life is dependent on him to have food and to have shelter.
Do you think the equal pay, I'm saying in it's usually based on a man, like when I started studying law, everyone was like, oh, why do you want to go into a man-dominated world? Why does it have to be a man-dominated world? Yes, okay, I'm not practicing law because I'm very airy and not a lawyer, but why does everything have to be seen as a man-dominated world? So who in essence determines a woman's pay is a man. Mm. So why does a woman get paid less? Because in a man's mind, and when I was going for interviews, they would always say, when are you planning on having kids? Do you ask the man the exact same question when you're in the interview? Just because I'm a woman and I'm 26 years old, well, not now, but then I was 26, and people would be like, when are you planning on having kids? Why do you have to ask me? I don't know.
And I suppose if you were to say, I'm planning on having kids in the next 2 years, that would work against you.
Yes.
Because they would have to give you maternity leave. Yes. They would have to pay you. It would be a lot more time off work. You would probably be a bit more distracted from your daily job. And I think that would work against you if you were to be honest and say, I'm planning on having kids in the near future.
But that's what's so irritating. So they see us as, yes, and also they don't see us as a permanent fixture because we're going to have kids.
Mm.
But how many women are running households when the man is staying at home looking after the children?
Exactly. Let's talk genocide. Women make up 80% of all the refugees and displaced people in the world. So 80% of refugees in the world are women. Now, this leads to things like genocide, sexual abuse, sexual exploitation. So that is just a shocking statistic that 8 out of every 10 are female, of people.
But I think also because a lot of the time is that women are the ones that are will run away, whereas men will be rallied into the wars. Or and a lot of the times, like if you look back at countries when genocide happens or something happens, they will tend to kill the man because a woman is less of a threat. Who says I can't pick up a gun and shoot you back?
Yeah.
Not saying that they should go and start killing women in terms of, but men don't see us as such a threat. They see us as a weaker individual to them.
Early marriage. More than 64 million girls worldwide are child brides. 46% of women aged between 20 and 24 in South Asia and 41% of women in West and Central Africa. Reports show that they are married before the age of 18. So I think, how can you commit to somebody for the rest of your life when you're still a teenager yourself? So I don't think this is things that these arranged marriages, it's not willing on the part of the girl.
I think from a more of a humor side of that, my mom would probably be ecstatic because that means she would have had a grandchild for much longer. But from the point of I'm 28 and I still can't even find myself settling down long term or getting married. And I can only imagine at 16, I was a child. Imagine having to be, but those women are then at that guy's beck and call. And that's
well,
just scary.
This is, I think, also things that come from women, how women talk to other women and how women talk to girls and tell them to look beautiful because they need to find a man, or tell them that they need to be the certain way. They need to know how to manage the household to please a man. So let's just hear a bit more about that.
We teach girls to shrink themselves, to make themselves smaller. We say to girls, you can have ambition, but not too much. You should aim to be successful, but not too successful. Otherwise, you will threaten the man. Because I am female, I'm expected to aspire to marriage. I'm expected to make my life choices, always keeping in mind that marriage is the most important. Now, marriage can be a good thing. It can be a source of joy and love and mutual support. But why do we teach girls to aspire to marriage and we don't teach boys the same? We raise girls to see each other as competitors, not for jobs or for accomplishments, which I think can be a good thing, but for the attention of men. We teach girls that they cannot be sexual beings in the way that boys are. Feminist, a person who believes in the social, political, and economic equality of the sexes.
Yes, you're listening to a Women's Day special with myself, Jonathan Sinclair. I've got my co-host, Tamarin Jardine, with me. And just before we carry on with the rest of the issues that are affecting women globally in 2015, let's just welcome our guest, Andile Khalesiwe. Now, let me get your mic on there.
Yeah.
You are a presenter, television, radio. People know you mainly from Kumbulekaya.
Yes, it's true.
But why I really wanted you today is your involvement with the Open Disclosure Foundation. Now, this is an organization that takes care of and helps abused women. Is that correct?
That's what it is. I started the Open Disclosure Foundation in 2002 because I myself was a survivor of sexual violence. And at the time, there were no organizations that focused specifically on young people and sexual violence. And because I was working for a youth radio station at the time, when I came out on air about my story, what had happened, such an outpouring and influx of young people saying, well, what's happened to me too, but I don't know where to go. And so that's where the organization started. I mean, I started out in the entertainment industry as a muso. That's my first love, singing, writing songs. Never in my wildest dreams did I think I would have an NGO and deal with, you know, some of these issues. But now, in hindsight, I actually know it's everything aligned with why I'm here, my purpose. And that is to add to this whole thing of healing
so
people.
So you've spoken very openly about the sexual abuse that occurred with you, and it's a very tragic story. But do you believe that if that hadn't happened, none of this would have happened? This you wouldn't be helping other women in the way that you are.
I think not. I think it's a catalyst. I think put that aside, and I'm looking at what I'm doing now outside of the issues of sexual violence. I think I still would be helping people. Mm. I'm also working, you know, on substance abuse issues. Mm-hmm. Just the whole thing, I guess, because of all these issues that you were describing earlier, some of them is like, ooh, okay, yeah. Mm. I think, you know, to be a present human being, present within yourself and show up in life, you can't do that and not be touched. Mm-hmm. And not want to do something to change what the status quo is. So mm-hmm. I think for me, yes, what's happened to me makes everything that I do that much more defined, and, you know, and the passion behind that. But I still think, even if it hadn't happened to me, mm-hmm. I think it would still be a path, because for me also it's something that defines why I'm famous. Mm-hmm. Because around that time, the tabloids were starting out in South Africa, and so I'd find myself being written about, oh, she went and had a boob job, oh, she did this and the other. And at some point I was like, is this why I'm famous? Is mm-hmm. this, you know, so that I'm tabloid fodder? No. And when that happened, when that girl called in the radio station trying to kill herself, and Fresh was asking why.
Well, let's just give a bit of a backstory here. You were actually on YFM at the time. You were speaking to DJ Fresh, which was that when he was doing the morning show or the afternoon drive? Afternoon show. So mm-hmm. one of their most popular shows. Yeah. I mean, a girl phoned in.
So I'm at home. I'm not working. It's mm-hmm. a Friday. I'm listening to Fresh, and this girl calls in, and she's crying, and she wants to kill herself. Fresh talks to her. Sends her back to the producer. I'll get your details and see mm-hmm. how, you know, we can help. And the next thing, I think on the same Friday, he then comes back on air, and he talks about how this girl is being abused by a stepfather. Now, I remember so vividly, I was at a best friend's house, house sitting for the weekend, and for the first time in my career at the time as a musician, I now have to deal with, because hearing Fresh talk about this sends me to my own
place.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh my God, I went through that. Mm-hmm. And then that entire weekend, I remember I had planned a weekend of partying, and I'm at a friend's house, so, you know, mm-hmm. we can do it. It never happened. In fact, it just was a spiraling out of, I don't know, I think out of emotion, not necessarily out of control, but my emotions just came flooding out, because for the first time in a long time, I now was faced with this, and the fact that I hadn't said anything to many people in my life, and what am I going to do about this? Because now this girl can't kill herself. Mm. It's not her fault. She needs to get help. Okay, but you can't help her. Who's going to help you? You know? And then over that weekend, the Monday, I'm calling Fresh, and I'm like, I want to come on air with you. He's like, mm. what do you mean? I'm like, okay, let's get together. We got together. I explained what was happening. He's like, oh my God, what are we going to do? I'm like, no. I think I want to come on air. I think I want to talk about this. I think, first of all, I want to help that girl. But I also feel that because of her story, we'd had other calls, other mm. people also talking about it. And then I went, and I remember we recorded a promo. We played the promo for about 2 days, in which time I was just praying and psyching myself up, because am I really going to do this? What's the tablets going to do? What's going to happen?
Is it going to backfire?
People might say, attention?
Exactly, you're trying to, you know, promote your own career.
And then the day came. I've never been so nervous in my life. To this day, I've never had an experience like that.
Well, I think speaking about that just to a normal person would be tough. Mm. Going on air and revealing it to the world, essentially, is a whole different ballgame.
But it was one of the most... It was a birthing moment. Mm. It was a death moment and a birthing moment, because in one interview, I had people who were listening on the radio on the highway turning around and off-ramping and coming to Bertram's. We're still at Bertram's. And by 6 o'clock, when the show finished, we had, I don't know how many people outside of the studio, and said, okay, we want to talk. I've also gone through this. Mm. Some people also in the entertainment industry. I remember a guy, we all know the guy, and he was like, my wife has gone through this, and I've never known how to deal with it, because mm. something happens to her. It's either she smells something and then she knocks down.
It triggers it.
And then she just won't talk, and I can't touch her and whatever, whatever. And so, and the phone calls. And so actually Fresh and I started Open Disclosure. it was more my passion, but he helped me start it. Because at that point, it was like, you've opened wounds. You can't just leave it out or leave people like that. Mm-hmm. So then the business of everybody would call, calling them back. Okay, let's find a place. Where can everyone get together? So that's why at times I would have these meetings with these people I'd never met at a park somewhere, because we didn't have a venue. Other times we'd use, you know, YFM premises over the weekend. And then I remember being invited by one of these NGOs who dealt with this. And I had my first counseling. They had a conference in Cape Town. I had my first counseling therapy session in my hotel room with this beautiful older colored lady in Cape Town. That was the first time ever that I had sat and now was recalling what had happened and was explaining this to everyone. And obviously before doing that interview, I'd had to go home and say to my mom, look, this is what's happened. And my mom was like, what?
Okay, so your mother didn't know about the abuse that had taken place at that time.
Nobody knew. Nobody knew. Because it also, I mean, this is what saddens me about the work I do in 2015, that there's still a girl out there who still can't say anything to anybody. I would have thought that, you know, with the advent of all these campaigns and all this work that has happened from then up till this point, that if your child sits in, you know, across from you and says, mommy, so-and-so is touching me, that you're not going to want to smack her and tell her to shut up because this isn't true, because you want to protect her ever. But it's still, that's what's happening. So I had to tell my mom, and I'm so grateful that on the day that I was supposed to do the interview, somehow because of work, she was called in to go out of town. But I didn't want her to hear this with everybody else. I'd already shared with her, but I felt like whatever Fresh, because I said to Fresh, don't hold back. Ask me whatever you want to ask me. If we're going to do this, let's really do this. And so I didn't want her to, along with Gauteng and, you know, whoever's listening to hear. So I said everything to her. She told my uncles, because obviously then my uncles were like, where is he? Because she was never married to my dad. She was a singer. She was a singer and a model. He was also a singer, and it was one of those. So he was not in our lives. And then she says to me, I remember a day where he called and he apologized out of nowhere. I hadn't heard from him or seen him, and he just, he called and he said,
so it was sort of a general apology, nothing specific.
He just was like, no, for everything I've ever done to you and our daughter, I'm sorry. I hope you guys are fine and whatever. My mom's like, that's weird. I'm fine. I'm married. She's in school. She's okay, you know. So when I told her this, she's like, that's why then he called and said all those things. She didn't get it at that point. So yeah. So, but the thing about that experience is that it then catapulted me to all these other things, and helping women. And I really thought in 2015 we'd be saying something different, but we're not.
Okay. But do you think, and you said earlier that your experience would still be where you were today.
Yeah.
But do you not think that had you not had that experience, you wouldn't have been able to help as many people? Because you've opened up a way of communication, because humans want to create a connection.
Sure.
So if you hadn't experienced it, people probably wouldn't be as forthcoming with you because they can't connect to you on that level.
But I also believe that we are what we intend. So for me, intention is everything. And so whether I've experienced something or not, but if my intention is to send through to you energy that heals whatever it is, you know, the subject. I might not have had breast cancer, but I could be able to sit with a woman who's going through breast cancer and not know exactly what she's going through, but know the general state of pain and, you know, discomfort and dis-ease that she's in. And if my intention is pure, she'll receive me that way. So I think always having, life is about a story.
Yeah.
No better place that tells a story or wants a story like America. That's why they even fake these stories. And I get that life is about a story. And in order to change people's lives, you have to have had your own story. But I also think that that should never be something that hinders us from extending ourselves and, you know, and being empathetic.
That's a valid point.
Yeah.
How does the Open Disclosure Foundation help these women? Does it just get them around to talk about it relay their experiences. How? What is the process of helping them?
So we are a long-term therapy center, mm-hmm. because we also, when we started the foundation, in finding out and doing research, what's out there and how people doing this, it was mostly you come in, you have 2-3 sessions. If we need to help you get a lawyer, pro bono, we can do that, and that's it. But so for us, and I've seen it, you know, with myself too, that even all these years later, something can happen. Somebody can either say something, or I can see something, and it'll trigger.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not as hectic as it would be for somebody who hasn't gone through therapy, mm-hmm. because I've gone through all the angles.
So you almost have tools to deal with those triggers.
Yes, yes. So for us at the core, it's that. That's why it's a long-term therapy center.
Mm-hmm.
We know that rape touches your soul mm-hmm. and seems to damage the core of who mm-hmm. you are. And in order to try and repair that, it's not going to take 5 sessions.
So you're not saying to women, come, we're going to heal you. You're more saying, we're here to help you, give you tools to cope with what has happened
yes.
to you. You can never take it away.
No. We can never take it away, but we can actually empower you so that you have dominion or power over this situation, as opposed to that the other way around. Because the thing about sexual violence that people don't get is that it affects every area of your life. So whether it's relationships, whether it's work, whether, you know, socially, how you relate with people. And so that's why for me, even when I was hands-on giving therapy, I would make sure that we go through. Some women who have not been raped cannot stand the sight of their own bodies.
Mm.
If you can't love yourself and you can't look at yourself and appreciate who you are, how then are you going to be able to give yourself to whoever, the next person? How are you going to even excel at work, you know, and bring your core out? So for us, it's those things. I believe a lot in group therapy, because I think also when you are in that group, that's where you realize whether your story is more hectic or less hectic than the next person's. But also at the core of that is where we can then all share. Because this is the thing. As humans, we all have coping mechanisms, mm-hmm. and they're not studied. They're not, you know, you don't have to have read about it wherever. Inherent in us are ways to deal with pain. And so before you even get to a place like mine, open disclosure, there are things that you are doing to help yourself cope,
mm-hmm.
whether they're correct or not, or whether, you know, they're fully fledged or not, but they were there. And so when we're in a group therapy session, we share those things. And for those that, you know, might do more harm than good, then we'll kind of help you, you know, you can do that, but do it this way. And give you tools. For instance, writing is one of the most powerful methods of just
getting, really helps you to slow down your thoughts.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And the thing about it, when you write your story, Jono, the first time you get to us, and then we take that, whatever you wrote, file it. We do the work with you. 6 months later, write again.
Mm-hmm.
The same story. Take these 2 stories and read them. You'll see how you wrote it the first time and mm-hmm. how you wrote it the second time. We'll tell you how far in your journey you are.
Mm-hmm.
Because the first time we'll have a lot of hatred and anger towards either the person or to yourself.
Mm. And you're allowing self-blame. That situation.
I was about to say, and you're a victim a lot in the first instance. But the more, through hindsight, the more you do the work, it's not about you, you know, saying, okay, or us saying, if you didn't wear that short skirt, he would not have raped you. We're not doing that. But I want you to see yourself in the mix, in this pain, in this picture. What could you have done differently? Because that's the thing about rape. South Africans have a tendency of saying, oh no, she's lying. She cries wolf all the time. She says this person raped her, that person raped her, and this person raped her. Well, the truth is it does happen.
Mm.
It's like I always use the analogy of a dog. If you, the 3 of us in here in this room are scared of dogs, if that dog were to walk in here and, well, let's say the 2 of you are not and I am, it would want to bite me because whatever it is that I release, those pheromones that says
the energy,
I'm terrified. So same thing. You know, as a girl who's been through sexual violence, should you come across a perpetrator, even with your friends, chilling at her, whatever, they'll always be the one.
Because also
because
you
haven't dealt with it.
Yeah, you give off a woman who's a victim has that. A man that is going to dominate a woman can sense which woman can be the victim. And they will always go for that woman, whether or not she intentionally gives off. It's a psyche that happens at below conscious level that people, yeah. men who are those kind of men, can pick up on their victims and a woman that can be submissive towards yeah. them.
Well, my mom was wanting to teach Sunday school at one point, and she had to go on a course for it. Mm. And they said you have to be so careful who you get to work with children, because sexual predators can spot a child that's already been abused. And it's so much easier to abuse that child because they've already been abused and they expect it and it's nothing new to them. And they can spot them a mile away.
Of course. And they can groom them and they can re-terrify them, you know. So, but that's why even the slogan for Open Disclosure, talking is therapy. I can't stress it enough. If you've been through sexual violence, no matter how long ago it happened, you have to get help for it. Mm. You have to almost take yourself back from that experience. Because if you don't, you remain a victim all of your life.
Is it necessary to get into the gory details in this therapy to actually talk about the physicality of what that person did to you?
Mm.
It is. It is necessary to even describe the smell.
Mm.
And I know it's going to make you want to vomit. You're going to, you know, but it's necessary because what you give attention to or what you resist grows.
Mm.
So if you're going to keep it locked up somewhere, it'll always be that thing that
niggles you in the
back
of your head.
And it's powerful because you can't really deal with it.
Mm.
So actually, what? Look at all of it. Deal with it. Take your power back from it and move on.
What about if you were to be a female victim of sexual violence and going to a male counselor? Is that something that could work?
Mm.
Or is it necessary to have another female there too?
Well, it depends at what point in your your journey.
Okay.
I still for the first time in my life, is it in 2015? Was it last year? I can't remember. But for the first time in my life, I allowed myself to be massaged by a male.
Mm-hmm.
It had never happened before because it just was.
They give a better massage.
I don't know. That guy, Chinese man.
He was average.
Nah, he was average. But I knew all along that it had everything to do with my experience. Mm. And it wasn't a thing of, I'm scared. It wasn't that. But it was just, I don't know you like that.
So
you had developed
a bad relationship to men in your head. Men in general, I would imagine.
Well, that comes with the whole journey of healing. Mm. And that's why, again, therapy is so important, because then you get to put everything into perspective. Then I've heard victims say to me, how can you say not all men are rapists? Because then once you've just gone through it and you've had a boyfriend and now he's rejecting you because you just told him whatever, in your head, men are just these, you know, and I've had clients who will then say, oh no, I'm now lesbian. I'm like, no, you're not.
Mm.
You're just going through something so painful that you can't bring your little brain and your mind and everything to deal with this. So it wasn't necessarily men are, because I've done that work, but it's, I'm uncomfortable with you. It's still there, that part. And then it was a challenge to me because it's my favorite place, this Chinese place. They do cupping and all kinds of things. And they're like, we only have a male. I was like, I'll call you back. I put the phone down. And I had a conversation with myself. I'm like, okay, so what's the worst that could happen?
Mm.
It's in a place with, you know, everybody's there and you're getting a massage.
The worst thing that could happen there would be a really bad massage.
Mm. Yeah, and exactly. You know,
but in your brain, you need
it
to.
In my brain. But then, and it was such a great indicator of how far I've come as a woman.
Mm.
Because then I was like, exactly that. Okay, let's go. Let's do it. So I called back and I was like, yeah, okay, we'll take the mail. And I went and, funny enough, I even thought getting undressed and putting myself in the bed would be an issue. I did everything as usual, and then the guy came in, and then he started doing it. I was like, okay, he's too hard. And
see, that's what I like, I think, because they are harder than the females.
Yeah, now my skin is hurting. I'm like, okay, that's the only thing. Okay, next, like, get me my females back, you know? But I'm glad that I went through that experience, because for me, everything is an indicator of my journey.
I think it's one thing to go for a massage with a male therapist. That's one challenge. But it must be a bigger challenge to have a normal relationship with a man, a normal sexual relationship.
Oh, yes.
Not when you're in the sexual act or having intercourse, not to feel dirty, not to feel...
Yep. but also just the intimacy to allow yourself to be woman.
Mm-hmm.
And that took a long, that took a lot of doing. That took a lot of therapy, a lot of, Andile, who are you? Ultimately, are you going to allow these experiences to define or to even rob you mm-hmm. of your femininity? I'm a strong female, and my friends always tell me that. But I love being a woman. I love being a girl. I love being a lady.
But and now, so this is only since your healing process yes, began. I would imagine before yes. that.
Before that, it's like, but that's exactly it. It's like, okay, who am I? And when the rapes, or just after that happened, in my teens, I was very tomboyish. The way that I dressed, I mean, I remember I was sharing...
You're trying to make yourself unappealing.
I was protecting myself. Mm. I was sharing with my boyfriend the other day, we know we have a mutual friend, and I was saying, this person, the last time I saw her was in high school, where I remember distinctly the entire school went ballistic because I was part of this fashion show and I was wearing a tight dress and it was short and heels and they could see my body. And everyone was like, what the heck? Why are you hiding yourself?
Mm.
Because I would always wear a jersey. And if it sits there, then my blazer will sit there, just like my skirt and, mm-hmm. you know, my socks. The gray ones were for winter, white ones, short ones for summer, but I would have my winter socks throughout the year and I was always covered, because I guess I was trying to protect myself. So to go from that and being a tomboy to now be in the music industry and the record company tells you sex sells, and then to then feel, ooh, okay, I'm just an object. I need to bear it all in order to sell records. Mm. I'm not going to do that. And in fact, my breakout single was somewhat of a sexy song. And I realized that even those lyrics, I literally was trying to take my power back. But having relationships and being an equal partner and showing up in those relationships was hard.
Mm.
It was the hardest part of the journey. And how I overcame that was through group sessions with mm-hmm. women, where we would actually, let's talk about it.
Well, these group sessions, I would imagine, are like a microcosm of what is going on in the rest of the country. Mm-hmm. So are there any sort of golden threads that you notice through all the stories you hear? Are there certain factors that come into play? Are there certain personality types that get abused, or a certain type of economic status who gets abused? What sort of similarities do you notice in the people that come to you for help?
You see, it's different now compared to, let's say, 10 years ago. Now everything is so transactional. The rapes also are now more intimate, for lack of a better word. It's women are getting raped by people they know.
Mm. Or even by their partner.
By their
yeah.
partners. It's like, because he's a BE guy, or because he's rich, or because he's this, he's that. And you know it's an unequal relationship. You want whatever it is that you want. You're not anticipating the violence that can, you know, become part of that. So now it's kind of different. But back then, it was a lot of the guy down the street that I knew growing up, and he's been watching me, or my family know him, or it's an uncle, or a teacher in school, or even a priest. You know, I got a lot of those teachers in school, because then I do school tours. And one thing always, though, that for me was always a thread amongst the women, is how after the rape, you are literally silenced. You if you don't have that friend or that one person that you say something to, and then that person is brave enough to either pick up the phone, call me, the foundation, or whoever, then you literally are left to deal with this whole thing by yourself.
Mm.
And that my sadness through it all as well, which I saw across, and this was across color lines as well, is how our mothers in particular were not there, or are not... They're not quick to be, oh, really, did it happen? Let's go find him. Let's go call the cops, or let's go do this. It's almost like you can tell her today and they're going to look at you. They might not outright at that moment say, oh, no, you're lying, or oh, no, you're not telling the truth. You know, there are ways where it's like, okay, really, when did this happen? Okay, well, I'm going to talk to your dad about that. And maybe a day or two later, then there'll be a decision to do something. And that something is usually not even to help you. It's more about them.
But do you think that if you look at it as from a mother's perspective, it's the failure on them? That's sometimes where it is that this happened to their child under their watch, and that's why they need to sort of take they feel like they failed, and that's why they're not reacting quick enough. And I think that's where parents need to also understand that it's not their failure if something happens to their child.
At all. And that, in fact, you then victimize that person again
more
if you don't immediately. Because even when I do school tours, I'll say to girls, if your friend tells you, they're not telling you so that you go around gossiping.
And a lot of the girls do gossip about that situation.
And even if your friend says to you, please don't share or don't tell anyone, that person is crying for help. The fact that they told you, it's not about you gossiping, but the wisest thing you can do,
not tell a friend, but go to
a social worker,
yeah,
or a teacher. Or actually, teachers, I also wrote out because they also gossip,
yeah,
about these things.
But sometimes there's like a counselor at the school, or there's a priest, or someone that.
So it's that to for the girl to realize that when she's telling me and she says, "Don't tell anyone," she's literally saying, "Don't gossip," but I need help. So be that lifeline. And get her the help that she needs.
Call her parents or something. I do remember a situation at school with a young girl at boarding school. She had made a mistake with her boyfriend. It wasn't at all in terms of that, but she fell pregnant. And she told my sister. And my sister obviously came running to me. And my first thing was, tell her to tell nobody until she has spoken to her mother. And she refused. I was her senior. I went and I got her phone. And I called her mom and said, you need to come to school. Your daughter needs to speak to you. And she was taken out of school instantly. And I think I don't know what happened because she left the school. But I presume they sorted it out. But at that point, it wasn't my story to tell.
Sure.
And a lot of kids in that situation, and I still remember girls gossiping in the younger, because she had told some of the girls. And they used that against her instead of seeing. She was a child. She was 14 years old. Whatever happened, we presume it was with her boyfriend.
Yes.
None of us actually know what happened.
Yes.
But everyone turned her into this this slut. I hate the word slut, but that's what they turned her into. Instead of saying, maybe there was something else going on here, or imagine what that child's going through. She's 14.
But that's the thing, that kids are so cruel at that point, at that age. And that's why, for me, one of the most fulfilling things I do when I you know, do this work is to go to schools and have these conversations. Because it's only when you, as an outsider, and especially celebrities, and I'll bring some with me, and when they hear it from someone they idolize, then it kind of sinks in. Oh my God, okay, so I shouldn't. Because what they realize is the consequences of that.
Yeah.
It's like that whole thing, recording someone with your phone and then posting it everywhere. That kid can end up killing herself.
Yeah.
Mm.
When you guys thought, no, it's just a joke. It's in the class.
Or it's funny.
In school. It's funny, whatever. And it's not. So it's that. It's not that kids are evil, but it's the age that they're at. And it's just needing a voice of reason to say, guys, because imagine if it was you. How would you want people to treat you if you have something this huge happen in your life? You wouldn't want to be the butt of all jokes and everybody in school talking about you. So,
I think it's also a delicate balance to walk. Like, for guys, I mean, you now have a boyfriend, and I'm sure there's certain things that he has to do, and I would imagine in certain areas he has to be a bit more sensitive, a bit more allowing you to come at him in terms of sex and things like that. How do you integrate that into your normal relationship? Like, not making the guy feel guilty for wanting to have sex?
Well, I mean, my current boyfriend is very lucky because a lot of the work has been done already. So, I mean, it's a normal relationship now. But at that time when I was dealing with all of this and taking my sexuality back, it was a hard thing. Because at first you go through, I don't want to do this. We can be friends. It's platonic. Not going to do anything else. And then you go through, okay, but that's not going to work either. In order for this to be a fully-fledged relationship, certain things are, you know, and we're consenting adults, so certain things are going to have to happen. And that's when I actually stopped dating. And I was like, okay, I'm clearly not ready. I need to first deal with me. Mm-hmm. And then when I've dealt with me, then I can give myself to someone. And that was one of the most fulfilling times of my life. Because I really did take my sexuality back, and the therapy sessions that I would go through, because you have to strip yourself down to everything if you really want therapy to happen. However the rape took place, whatever position it was, wherever it was, all of those things, you have to start disassociating those things with the violence, so that sex is just that, an act in its pure, you know, without all the things that I bring with it. To it. Mm-hmm. And that's why for me, therapy is so key. And I say to women, because if you don't do that, then when you do get that trigger, your boyfriend is going to be your perpetrator, and relationships break because of that. Because you now, he does something because he thinks you're experimenting and it's part of your sexual life, or he's trying to introduce something, and then to you it reads as whatever happened that you never dealt with. Yeah. And so now when you see him, he wasn't part of that, but now he's part of that whole thing, that whole, you know,
and
violence.
Then I suppose you could be build up some sort of resentment to him.
Exactly.
Subconsciously.
In marriages, the guy that called me was going through exactly that. He's like, I love my wife with everything. And people look at us and think, you know, I'm famous, she's not, but they think we're this amazing couple. But we do not have a sex life. And she hates the missionary position.
Because she's looking at him.
Yeah. And also feeling, you know, a victim. He probably was holding her down or something. So therapy, guys, it's the most crucial thing, because there you put everything in perspective and you can walk away with just yourself and almost like a clean slate. Now you can start to put new experiences, your sexual experiences. If you don't do that, then
I think it's a lot easier for women who are sort of older, you know, early adulthood, late teens, to get therapy, because they have the language skills to speak about what happened. But when it's a little girl, how do you cope with that? How do you bring that out of her and get her to explain what happened when she doesn't have the knowledge and the language skills to decipher it in her own mind?
And that's why, part of why it was hard for me to deal with kids. I was doing work in primary school and I thought I will be an alcoholic. Because every day you come home, all I would have was just the in my mind, the pictures of these little kids and the words that are coming out of their mouths. Jonah, they do have the vocab.
And they have the ability to draw it.
They know what it is. I mean, I'll never forget this little boy in Alex. That story still traumatizes me. I'm asking a question, what is rape? And they're giggling and they're laughing and they're like, ah! The one says, oh no, it's when somebody tries to do silly things to you, you know, and then different answers, whatever. And then this boy, and something just in me was like, oh my, there's something wrong there. And I go to him and I give him the mic, because he put up his hand. I'm like, so what is it? He said, it's sodomizing. And then all the kids burst out laughing. But this work, you have to also be spiritually in tune, because I understood why they were laughing. They didn't know the word. Because when they started laughing, I was like, okay, wait, why are you guys laughing? And I went to one of the kids who was laughing. I thought, amazing. What is that? You know? And I was like, okay, I understand where this is at. All right. And then I went back to him, like, what is that? And then instead of answering the question, he's now talking about what's happening to him. Every night when my mom sends me to the shop, this man from next door, he follows me, and then just before I get to the shops, he'll grab me and there's a bush and he'll take me to the bush and this is what he does and whatever. Just this boy explaining this, I look up, half of the school is in tears because they're all going through this. I couldn't. I broke down. I took this boy, had to go to the principal's office with him. And next thing I know, we're sitting there with the principal. It's almost like half the school now is being also brought into the staff room because now all these kids are now, like, it was a nightmare. went back to the Department of Social Development. It was a state of emergency in that school. They sent social workers and because it's unthinkable that you have an entire school community of kids all experiencing the same thing.
Yeah.
And I just thought, I can't do this. I got home, I wanted to have finish a bottle of wine by myself and cry my eyes out and be like, God, why? You know? Mm-hmm. So it's that, but it's also, I don't think I have the stomach also to sit there and speak to a little girl or a little boy about sexual positions or what he did or what, because to them it feels good. It's biology. You touch me in a particular way, it's going to feel good. Now you're going to add things. Is it wrong? Is it right? Whatever. I'm a kid. I don't know.
But when they get older, they deal with that. And I look at my family, and a family member was, as a young boy, it happened to him a few times. And only now are his siblings and them dealing with it. And they are 50s and 60s. And it's hard, and a lot of kids only deal with it later on, and that's, I think, what's hard, is that young kids don't understand.
Ladies, I wish we had more time. It's been such a tough topic, but I really feel like we have helped people. And if people want to get hold of the Open Disclosure Foundation, how do they go about that?
Okay, so you can get a hold of us. We have a Facebook page. We also have... Oops, I switched off my phone. Oh, okay, this is terrible. I'm going to give you the numbers. I don't know them.
Well, I think the website is best, hey?
Yes. www.opendisclosure.org.za and our offices are in Soweto, and other offices where we deal with substance abuse are in Pretoria, North Rand.
Tamarin, how do we keep up with you?
At Tamarin_Jardine on Twitter, at Tamarin and Jardine on Instagram and Facebook.
Ladies, thank you so much for joining us today for this Women's Day special. It's been an eye-opener. It's been a tough one. But I think these are conversations that need to take place.
Yes.
So thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure.
Many people wonder where my secret lies. I'm not cute or built to suit a fashion model size. When I start to tell them, they think I'm telling lies. I say, it's in the reach of my arms, the span of my hips, the stride of my step, the curl of my lips. I'm a woman, phenomenally. I walk into a room just as cool as you please, and to a man the fellows stand or fall down on their knees. Then they swarm around me, a hive of honeybees. I say, it's the fire in my eyes, the flash of my teeth, the swing in my waist, the joy in my feet. I'm a woman, phenomenally. Men themselves have wondered what they see in me. They try so much, but they can't touch my inner mystery. When I try to show them, they say they still can't see. I say, it's in the arch of my back, the sun of my smile, the ride of my breast, the grace of my style. I'm a woman, phenomenally. Now you understand just why my head's not bowed. I don't shout or jump about or have to talk real loud. When you see me passing, it ought to make you proud. I say, it's in the click of my heels, the bend of my hair, the palms of my hands, the need for my care. Because I'm a woman, phenomenally, phenomenal woman, all you women, and me.
Unreal, uncensored, unradio.
Cliffcentral.com.